You just said the most interesting thing I've ever heard you say.
Oh, God, what one of the 20 things that just spewed out of my mouth?
I'm so sick and tired of being everybody's mom. A quote from Wendy Snyder. For a warm Tuesday, I'm sick and tired of being everybody's mom.
You know, I really don't want to start the show off like this, but I am.
It's no way to start off a show.
Hi, everybody.
Hi, everybody.
I'm Wendy. That's Bill.
One of us is sick and tired of being everybody's mom. Can you guess which one?
Listen, I know that your life is perfect and your girls never gave you issues and everything. I'd like to talk to Terry, quite honestly, about it, because dads don't sometimes seem to know what's going on.
And ignorance is bliss, my friend.
I mean, dads do, and I know you changed diapers, and I know you fed them, and I know you did everything
yes.
that probably your dad didn't do, because it was a new breed of dad.
Right.
But when it push comes to shove...
And you need a little love.
It's the mom.
It's the mom.
And I just really, like, I went to a christening 2 weeks ago. The day before, I'm telling everybody, get your dress pants out,
yeah.
get it ready,
yeah.
because I want to make sure they fit.
Yeah.
I want, because sometimes teenage boys don't wear dress-up clothes very often.
Right.
So make sure the shoes still fit.
Sure.
So the night before, I ended up having to get everything out and have everybody try everything, because guess who has to go shopping at the last minute
you.
If it doesn't fit?
You.
And everybody was set, except for the morning of Jimmy Mack.
Oh, surprise, surprise.
Nothing fit.
I'm not saying this to suck up. The mom's job is 100 times harder than the husband's job, the man's job, 100 times.
But then just now, you know, it's like, I got to tell you the honest to God truth. I get one kid up, a teenager, to get to high school in the morning. That's difficult because he just doesn't like to wake up.
Mm-hmm.
There's another one that picked his own college hours and doesn't start till 11.
Mm-hmm.
Kudos to you, Michael. And Jim can do what he wants.
Mm-hmm.
And the dog sleeps all day because he's old.
Mm-hmm.
So when I leave and get on the expressway to come to work,
yeah.
it's kind of like a sigh of relief for me.
This is the easiest part of your day, isn't
oh
it?
My God. It's
sure.
the most fun, the easiest.
Yeah.
I get in here. Poor John DeCoste is getting a knee replacement, so I'm giving him like a little coaching.
I was watching that.
Trying
that
to pump him up.
Very helpful of you. Yeah.
It's not fun or easy, but it's worth it.
Right, right.
And then I sit down to go on the air with my friend Bill Left,
because yeah.
this is all fun. Working with Bill is fun.
Yeah.
And then I look and I'm like, oh my God, who left their keys here?
Yeah.
There's a little picture of Pops and his granddaughter.
Steve Cochran and Abigail, his granddaughter. So you and I, 5 minutes later, figured out whose keys those were.
Can't pull the wool over our eyes.
I watch Blacklist, so I put pictures of everybody who works here at the station up on the window, and then we drew up a timeline, and then we determined, based not solely on the picture that we found on the keychain, they're probably the keys of Steve Cochran, to which you said the magic words, I'm sick and tired
of being
everybody's mom.
Yeah. I am, though.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I do things sometimes around here where, like, you'll be sitting in your seat and I realize you don't have headphones. You haven't realized it yet.
No.
So I'll unplug some and hand them to
right.
you. And Cochran looks at me and he laughs and he's like, you're such a mom.
Yeah.
I know.
You can't shake that. That's forever.
But there's nothing wrong with it, Wendy.
No, but I'm sick of it. Why can't yeah. somebody take care of me and put my clothes out the night before?
How does somebody like Mary, who's been a mom for years and years
and
years,
a grandmom
and a
now.
Grandmom, and
does
someday a great grandmom, how do you pull it off?
Do they take care of themselves at some point?
Oh, boy. Well, I have two boys. Well, I have a daughter, too, but no.
The daughter takes care of herself.
Yeah, well, you know, one of my sons is married and one of them is still in college. But, you know, like, we just had a wedding. And I did the same thing with the suits. And I said, you guys, if I have to iron anybody's
right.
shirts, put them out the night before, because I'm going to spend my time getting ready for the wedding. I don't
exactly.
need to be dealing with you guys. Oh, my gosh. And I knew my son's pants were not going to fit
because
he's been drinking too much beer in college. So I'm going, okay, we got to buy. So I just went on my own. I bought the pants for him.
So did I in several sizes, right?
Because yes,
then
yes.
they try them on at home. And then guess who has to return them?
That'd be you.
Exactly.
Right.
We have to return them. And I knew the same thing for my husband was probably going to have issues because
yep.
he always does because he hates
so it never ends,
up.
You're saying, Mary?
No.
You know how... here's a story that happens.
Okay, what would we do if we didn't have this?
The society would crumble.
Life.
Society would crumble. You know how once a year a mom takes it upon herself to draw up a bill for their child of all the services that they provide throughout the year?
I've never done that.
No, you don't need to do that.
I'm going to.
Please don't do that, because once you see the total, you'll have a heart attack. You'll die. But, you know, they add in like chauffeuring fees and cooking fees and just everything that a mom does throughout the day, they add that up, and it always comes to $1.6 billion a year.
Yeah, I know, from 0 to 18.
Yeah, yeah.
But then they make you smile, they do a joke.
When does that happen?
That's
going to
happen someday, you'll see.
When they move out and they come back once in a while, then you're like, oh.
You'll have a moment of glee.
Yeah.
See, I know.
I love my boys.
I do too, and I got to be honest with you, I love my birdies in the nest, but while they're in the nest, I bitch at them.
Yeah.
Yeah, you need them to go away from the nest for a while and come back. Then you'll appreciate them more.
And then they appreciate you more too.
Oh, yeah.
See?
My son came home for the weekend just one night from college. I think he just needed food.
It could have been just to see you.
I go, what are you doing here? I'm like, there's got to be an ulterior motive somewhere.
So chin up, little soldier. Everything will be fine.
All right, are you going to bring Cochran his keys?
That's not my job. Take a quick break, and then there's a lot more show. It's Phil and Wendy on WGN. You've got an advantage, though, because your initials are the same as the White Sox.
Oh, yeah.
You can do whatever you want.
That's true. It's Phil. It's Wendy. I love Molly Hatchet. Yes, I'm white trash. Nice to meet you.
You didn't have to admit that, but
I am.
Thanks for sharing that.
I am.
That was great.
And I'm a mom. Cochran's keys are still hit. Could you just at least take them? Because they're going to bug me
I'll take them, but I'm not going to give them to Steve.
You could probably start
his
car
remotely.
Chevy. Yeah.
White Lightning. Mine now. Finders keepers.
Now you're going to put them in your pocket, and now I'm going to worry that you're going to forget to give it to them.
You are cursed with the mom curse.
Oh,
you have it.
I have to tell you, I'm also cursed with the senior citizen curse.
What happened?
I am finished with physical therapy at Athletico.
Congratulations.
Thank you. I got my t-shirt and graduated.
Oh.
And then they push you out the door.
Yeah.
Fly, little birdie, fly.
Yeah. An emotional ceremony?
It was kind of emotional.
Who was the guest speaker?
Oprah
came in for this.
Yes.
Wow. That's impressive.
It's, you know, and this is what I was talking to John DeCoss about. The physical therapy part of a knee replacement is the hardest part.
I imagine it would be.
But you need to do it so you can use your knee, new knee.
Yeah.
So I graduated last week, and I need a place to ride the bike and do the elliptical and stretch this knee out.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a park district in our town, and I went last night to see if I was interested in joining.
Mm-hmm.
And it's pretty cheap. It's like, for a resident, it's $30 a month.
It's not bad at all.
I mean, they don't have a pool. They don't have a sauna or a steam room or
a weight equipment or a roof.
They do have that. There is a roof.
Electricity.
They just added it. Yeah,
they did.
The generator. As you're on the treadmill, it makes the electricity go.
Oh, that's excellent.
Actually, it's really all new state-of-the-art stuff where you can plug your own headphone into the elliptical or the bike, and you can either go to Netflix and sign into your account.
What? Really?
It's pretty cool.
You can watch a movie while you're on there?
Yeah.
Oh, that's great.
You know, you could just go to live TV and punch in. I was watching The Voice for the first time last night because I love Kelly Clarkson.
Yeah.
And now I will be watching it every night.
That makes the time go faster while you're on the machine. That's good.
So $30 a month, I thought that's not bad. You know, I'll do it for, you know.
$1 a day, Wendy.
Right. But then they said, you know, can we have your license? And I said, sure. And they punched things in and they said, okay, well, you apply for our senior citizen discount.
Oh, congratulations.
And I said, are you flipping kidding me? And she goes, what? I go, when do senior citizens start? And she said, 55. 2 weeks, I'm into it.
I bet you would rather pay the extra.
I would.
Than be considered a senior citizen.
Although now it's only $25 a month.
Nope. Welcome to old.
I know. Where else can I get a senior citizen discount? Denny's does not start at 55. 55 is too much.
And you're already qualifying. That's
55
great.
55 is a senior citizen?
Shouldn't be.
You're right behind me, all right?
No, I'm way behind you, but go ahead. What was your point?
Listen, when you turn 60, bring it on. Do everything.
Yeah.
I'll stop coloring my hair then. Let the gray show.
Yeah.
I don't care.
Yeah.
But 55?
It seems a little early. It does.
Should I pay the extra $5 just so I don't have to be a senior?
No. I would
Should
fight
I start
it.
Taking advantage of all this stuff?
Well, we've got, I'm looking right now. It looks like you can get a discount at Chili's if you're 55 and over, 10% off.
Do it.
It looks like Ben and Jerry. Oh, no, that's 60. Burger King, 10% off.
Burger King, get out of here.
Chick-fil-A. Ryan, does it say over at Chili's, do they have any pre-chewed ribs for people who qualify?
No.
It doesn't say.
They have the rib shake.
Right.
How about this Dunkin' Donuts, 10% off?
I was just there this morning to get coffee.
You could have saved 10%.
Flash that driver's license.
Yep. Take your time. You don't want to break your wrist while you're pulling it out of your purse really quick.
On Wednesdays, we could all get in the van and you can buy stuff for us at Kohl's.
Oh.
15% off on Wednesdays.
Wendy, the bargains are coming from all directions.
I just spent $280 at Kohl's.
Well, look at what you could have saved.
I'm going to return it all and get... Oh, my God. This is 55?
Yeah. How about that?
Can I come with you when you, next time you go to Subway? 10% off.
I go to Subway every day after school.
Oh, you're going
to
love this one. Taco Bell. 10% off.
10% off.
Oh, my. Bring the senior on.
Look at how excited you are now.
This is 55, Ryan.
Yeah. Yeah.
And what do I have to do? Just say I am your...
Just be crabby. Just go in and have a crabby attitude.
You forgot the mild sauce, right. Jerko.
Yeah, say that.
I was in line. I went down for the... When Billy Graham died, I went down to North Carolina, and I was behind a man at Wendy's who went through the process, paid his money in cash. He was probably in his 80s. Mm-hmm. And then afterwards looked at his receipt before he received all of his food and realized he didn't get the discount. And then he asked the 16-year-old behind the counter, who then needed to go to the manager. In the meantime, it's noon. You know, I've got like six people behind me. I thought it was fine, but the people behind me were not thrilled at how long the process took. Yeah.
When did they change it? Because forever, you had to be 65. To get these benefits,
yeah.
But now all of a sudden
55.
But if life expectancy is going up, why are businesses going in the opposite direction?
Because they realized when, you know, we used to say middle age was 50 or 60, now it's 30. Well, 45 is middle age.
Middle age realistically is 40 to 45, is realistically.
But in my head, middle age is 65 to 75, but it isn't.
So life expectancy at this point right now is 87, right? Isn't that what they're
saying? It's more, women live longer, hate to tell you that.
No, I know
it pisses you off.
It makes me very upset.
But as, you know, every man in my family died first, and as everyone says, they die to get out of it.
Wow.
That's why men die sooner.
Very honest. Yeah, we just give up at some point. I can't do this anymore. Please, sweet
take
death.
Take me now.
Take me. Please take me. Wow.
55. Look what you have to look forward to your next birthday.
How about Goodwill? We got to get Judy to bring us over.
There's got
to
be savings.
Yeah,
there.
Right now, once
10% off at Goodwill. On select dates, 10% to 20% off on
$3 at Goodwill. Yeah. At some point, they're going to pay you to take clothes from them at Goodwill.
I can't believe the Taco Bell, the Subway.
I know.
I mean, this is stuff. I have
Live
a kid who eats Subway every day after school.
Well, he's not 55.
No, but I buy it.
There you go.
You're his fence.
10% at all these places. I'm really excited to be 55, Louie.
How about it, honey? Is that great or what?
Yeah, bring it on.
I've been doing it for like 15 years now. And all the movie theaters, you get senior discount, too.
At 55.
Yes.
I think even earlier, because we were doing it when we were like 50.
But it's only for Kirk Douglas movies, Wendy. You have to see Kirk Douglas movies.
That airs at 3 o'clock.
Right, it's before 5 and Kirk Douglas.
Yeah.
And you have to have blue hair. And I think if they try to ask for your identification, it's illegal. So,
really?
Oh, because it's ageist or something.
Oh, maybe it is. Right. It's reverse ageist.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, good to know, Louie. I'll meet you for a cheap coffee and a Taco Bell Grande.
On the movie. Great. You got it.
Meet up with Wendy. You guys can talk about Edley Stevenson.
And quickly, Joe, how are you?
Hi, Wendy. I was just going to say the same thing. You can join ARP at the age of 50.
You've already been sent the forms.
Oh,
right?
As soon as I turned 50, I got the ARP information, and I didn't do it. But what does ARP?
You could get discounts on certain things, and like I get my automobile and my homeowner's insurance through the Hartford, which is through ARP. and nobody can match those rates.
Really?
You should check it out because it's really not that bad. And you do get discounts on a lot of stuff.
And it's like $15 to join for the year.
No, that's not bad.
All right, well, I'm joining ARP today, Joe. ARP!
Right. I joined for 5 years at a time.
All right, I'm doing it. Thank you, Joe.
You're welcome.
Yeah, I have my ARP card.
See?
It, you know, it works once in a while. My husband pulls it more than I do.
Does he?
Yeah. No. I don't Nick like
DiGilio,
to pull it
out. Take that and use it and enjoy it.
Sure.
All right, Jasmine, you got to send that to Nick. Also,
big print, if you wouldn't mind, Jasmine. Large print on all these forms.
847, stop your whining and bitching. I am not whining and bitching anymore.
No, you seem amazed.
I am happy to be 55. I can't drive 55, but I'll be 55.
See, it paid off for you. All right, we'll take a quick break. Wendy will take a nap, and then we'll be back after news. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. Thank you, Ryan. Hi, everybody. It's Bill and it's Wendy. You know our number and our text line. They're one and the same, 312-981-7200. Tomorrow's show will come from the Museum of Broadcast History, Wendy.
Oh, that's absolutely right.
That's
I have to figure out what I'm wearing. What are you wearing?
Call me and let me know so we don't wear the same thing.
Bill, as long as I've known you.
We don't want to look like Donnie and Marie. Or do we? That wouldn't be the worst thing in the world, that music ended abruptly.
I know. Where's the fade out? Lenny Kravitz, come on.
Yeah. So listen to us tomorrow from 10 to noon, and then the bonus hour where we will do the show from the Museum of Broadcast History. They've got this great exhibit about Saturday Night Live, and much of tomorrow's show is geared towards Saturday Night Live.
I cannot wait.
Yeah, me
Who's
too.
Doing news for us tomorrow? Is that you, Ryan?
I don't know. TBD. We'll All figure right. it out. We got a great show for you. Beck is here. No, I think that's... trying to think
Ryan's
of some other artist.
Practicing. Yeah. That's fantastic.
So stick
Ryan.
Around.
Yeah, that's excellent.
Oh, that's
cue up
super
the band.
Good.
Let's go.
Very good. Very good.
I've been practicing that since I was 12.
I have too. I'll never be on that stage, and I'll never be doing stuff. But every kid, well, not every kid.
A lot of kids.
A lot of kids do that.
Yeah.
Did you do that?
Yeah.
You got to do it for reals, didn't you?
I came close once. I was almost a cast member once a long time ago.
I would have watched you.
Yeah, it would have been fun.
You wouldn't have been sitting there today. You would have been doing movies.
Yeah. Was it between you and Farley?
Yeah, it came down to the two of us, Ryan. Thanks.
And then the dance. You guys did the dance
right.
off, and it
That's
was all settled
me.
After that.
Chippendale.
Man, it always comes down to a dance off. Always. Why does it have to be that way? Here's a question. Did anybody see this interview that was done with Ivanka Trump yesterday? Peter Alexander over at NBC did a really good job of asking Ivanka Trump some very, very important questions. He wasn't softballing it at all. He was really asking the questions that I think needed to be asked of Ivanka Trump. And it got really, really good at one point. And we'll play the clip for you when he, Peter Alexander of NBC, asked Ivanka Trump whether or not she believes... the accusers, you know, Donald Trump's accusers with some sexual improprieties. Listen to what happened yesterday. Listen to this.
Do you believe your father's accusers?
I think it's a pretty inappropriate question to ask a daughter if she believes the accusers of her father when he's affirmatively stated that there's no truth to it. I don't think that's a question you would ask many other daughters. I believe my father. I know my father. So I think I have that right as a daughter to believe my father.
All right. So here's my question. And it's a it's an 8-part question.
Okay. I'm ready to talk.
Right off the bat, as he asks the question, Ivanka Trump's answer. And by the way, I have to say, she's far more diplomatic than her dad.
Well, she knows how to, she's more of a people person.
Yeah, she reasoned it out. So
she has a filter.
Right, that's the difference, right? All right, so right off the bat, she says to Peter Alexander that that is an inappropriate question. So I guess the most important part of this is this. Is that an inappropriate question? I don't think it is it?
Yes.
Is it? Why?
Well, it's not an inappropriate question, but you're not going to get the answer you're looking for because that's your parent.
Right.
You're not going to say, oh, God, totally. He totally did it.
But where she is also serving a role in his staff, couldn't you say, if you're Peter Alexander, well, I'm not asking you that question as a daughter, but I'm asking you that question as a member of his staff.
See, the answer's not going to change. A daughter is not going to go against their father. For instance, Bill Cosby's daughter, Ensa, died from renal disease, 44 years old. That is heartbreaking. She was asked about, she has stayed out of the limelight prior to her death, but was asked, you know, do you believe the accusers? And she said, no, my dad's innocent. That's your dad. Your dad could do the worst thing in the world, but you just don't want to believe it. And if it hasn't been proven, you refuse to believe it.
But if we're talking about what is and isn't appropriate when it comes to Donald Trump and Ivanka, couldn't he have said, Peter Alexander, well, he has said some inappropriate things about you. He has said that if you were not his daughter, that he would probably date you. That's in it. That to me is inappropriate.
Right. And but that's your. He was right to ask it, I guess.
Yeah.
But he couldn't have expected an honest answer.
Because it's too hard. She's almost too close to it, right?
She is too close to it.
Yeah,
that's her dad.
Hmm. So if you're him, do you ask a follow-up or do you let it go?
You let it go.
Yeah.
What did he do?
He kind of let it go. He moved on to other topics, you know. And she took her time with the answer. I mean, she said, you know, it's an inappropriate question to ask me, but I don't think it is an inappropriate question. I think it's a great question to ask her.
I do. I think here's why I think it's inappropriate. She wouldn't have been there when it happened.
She
wouldn't
have
eyewitnessed it. So why ask her?
Well, I think mostly because this is such an important topic. This has really been the year of women coming to the front and saying, I'm not going to take this anymore. I've been harassed. I've been abused. I'm not going to keep it in anymore. And if she's filling this role, then she becomes a key element in all this, aside from being his daughter.
That's first and foremost, though.
It is first and foremost. But actually, in a weird kind of way, even though it's strange to ask that of a daughter, it's the first time someone has asked it of a family member of his. I don't remember anyone else asking anyone else in his family, current wife, post-wife, sons, anybody, that question. I think it's a great question to ask.
They should be asking Melania that question.
Shouldn't they?
That's
a perfect question to ask her.
But that, you might have a more truthful answer, because whether or not she was cheated upon.
Right.
But a daughter, unless I saw it with my own eyes, I wouldn't believe my father could do something like that.
But isn't the difference, you wouldn't believe it or you wouldn't want to believe it?
Both. Both. That's your dad. What if you did something heinous?
Yeah.
Your daughters, I don't think, would turn you in.
Right.
I mean,
right.
They just wouldn't. That's just not how it goes. It's like in the back of your head, you're like, it's just my dad.
But look at how important that difference is between actually truly believing it and wanting to believe it for your own sanity's sake.
I think she truly believes that these women are just trying to get money.
Yeah. Maybe. It's very possible.
I guess it was inappropriate because there wasn't going to be a truthful answer. Put it this way, he knew what the answer to that question was going to be, so he shouldn't have asked it. If you know what the answer is going to be,
why bother?
Yes. Didn't somebody give you that advice?
Yeah, that's the worst advice I ever got. Never ask a question you don't already know the answer to. It's the worst advice.
You should never ask a question if you know the answer.
Right.
Because you want to, it's a given.
Right.
Oh, my God.
All right. We'll take a quick break. Bridget Carey is here from CNET. We'll talk
to her.
Well, ask her.
It'd be appropriate to ask her.
I'll ask Bridget Carey that question. All right. That's coming up next. Bill and Wendy, WGN.
You know what that music means. It's a Tech Tuesday, and on the line with us, CNET senior editor Bridget Carey. Bridget, how are you today?
I'm feeling healthy, which is always a positive thing.
Yeah, healthy's good. That's a very good thing.
I have health on the mind.
You know, I got to ask you a health question about Apple. There is a health app on there, and it keeps track of you walking and your movement. But what if you're like on a bus or it's jiggling and you're not really walking? Is it accurate?
You know, I have that exact question for like my colleagues who test all these different things for their wrists. There's even a health tracker, not made by Apple, but another company. It is a ring for your finger, and I'm like, how could it know if I'm typing really fast? Am I working out?
Right.
And And honestly, the answer is that the tech has gotten so good that it can tell the difference between walking and just, you know, having a little wiggle with your wrist and shaking it about, you know. So, like, it knows the Macarena from actually walking, you know, that's what I'm saying.
But, Bridget, yeah. I know they say that they're accurate, but they can't be dead-on accurate, can they? It's kind of a rough estimate more than anything, isn't it?
Yes, I mean, if you wear, say, three different products trackers at once, there is a difference in some of them, compared to, like, you know, how exact they are, but they're very close. So what you're looking at is something that gives you a good picture right now of how active you were one day than another. They're able to tell stairs versus just walking versus running. So the sensors in there are getting better, and you know, it just more of a battery drain the better they get, but still they're getting better.
All right. Well, Apple is doing more in the healthcare business. What do we have about that?
Yeah, that's why health is on my mind. So it came out today that Apple quietly has been looking to hire doctors for its own healthcare clinic business. This is not for
Apple is taking over the world.
Everything.
I mean, my God.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the twist is that it's not for you and me. It's for their employees. And it's not the first time we've heard of a giant tech company looking into ways to do their own health care, possibly to save money, you know, by having it in-house. So what CNBC reported, and there's this website called AC Wellness, and it looks like a subsidiary of Apple, where they're looking to have doctors and hire people to, you know, create these wellness-type lifestyles for their employees to encourage good, you know, healthy habits, right? And by somehow putting their money and their smarts behind it, maybe they can solve a way to make healthcare cheaper for them as a company. Although their headquarters, this is just for their headquarters in California. This is not for all the people who work at Apple retail stores. So in California, you're looking at like 12,000 employees. But you look, okay, well, that's nice. Maybe they can, you know, find a way to do cheaper healthcare. And also have 12,000 employees to be guinea pigs to test the latest health gadget, right? You know, it's on Apple campus. So, you know, it kind of works two ways. Last month, Amazon announced that they were working with JPMorgan Chase and Berkshire Hathaway to go, what if we did healthcare for our own employees, too, and put our smarts together and made it cheaper? And you went, oh, wow, these companies want to solve healthcare. And then, wait a second. What is Amazon going to get out of it? They, you know, have a business of selling groceries and other things to your house. If they could find a way to do pharmaceuticals cheaper, I wonder if that benefit will trickle down to us. So there's always a benefit that could trickle down to us from these things. But right now, it looks like it's just going to be like for their employees.
But you'd have to be a major company. You just described some huge companies. You'd have to be about that size to be able to pull this off financially, wouldn't you? A smaller company couldn't swing this.
Absolutely. It takes a lot of money to be able to throw at a problem like this, but that's why they go, what can we get out of it later for this investment? Not just, you know, how nice is it that we have our own healthcare, but maybe they can do some internal testing, you know, try different things. What they would like to see is a world where all your doctors are using Apple products, right? So if they can find on their own campus ways that doctors like to use Apple products, well, you know, that's a step to converting everyone else.
They're taking over the world.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to open our eyes one day, and we're going to have little apples.
The logo?
It'll be our pupils.
All right.
I just don't want other tech companies to get into health, too. I think we had enough. Like, I don't need Facebook getting into health, and they do enough poking as it is.
Yeah, that's true. all right, the big thing, speaking of Facebook and Amazon and going online and everything, is this whole net neutrality thing that's going on. I had a couple of teenage boys, mainly my youngest, who was freaking out about this before the vote. Bottom line is the new guy in charge of the FCC wants to do away with net neutrality. How can we help? What do we do? Where does it stand?
Well, there's still another push, even though the FCC and Ajit Pai, you know, they voted to repeal it so that way the government can't, you know, force regulations about, you know, if your internet provider treats all traffic equally. You know, maybe they could have a fast lane that someone pays more for, or a slow lane, so to speak. That said, there's this movement. If you go on Reddit.com and some other sites now, they all are using hashtag one more vote, because there is a push to have a resolution passed in the Senate that will take that will undo what the FCC did. Like the push is, hey, Congress, can you just step in and undo what the FCC has done to repeal? And like the hashtag implies, there's only one more vote needed. So they're saying, call your senators, you know, if you want to make a difference, because time is ticking. And there has been talk like, well, if you don't like what the FCC does, can't Congress step in and do something about it? So that's what this is all about.
All right, but I still don't know what to do. I can, you know, just hashtag one more vote on all my stuff that I put up on social media. But do I really call my senator? Is that who to call? What do I do to make this go away?
Yeah, Wendy, I thought hitting like on Facebook made differences politically. No, mm-hmm. Yeah, it is about the, you know, getting awareness out so that way you do call your senator. No one, it actually takes effort to make change happen, right? So it's about calling. They say calls are sometimes better than emails because someone has to pick up the phone and listen to it versus, you know, like shooting off an email that can easily have an auto reply to it.
Yeah, so, but they could also hang up on you once they answer.
Yep, but you know, no matter what, something's better than nothing if you really care about a topic. Yeah.
And Bridget, I've heard people say over the last couple of weeks that they don't understand what the issue is with net neutrality. Where's the best place? Is it CNET where they kind of draw out the argument on both sides and say what's good about it and what's bad about it?
Yeah, well, we do have an explainer. I actually made this video that gives an analogy of it at a bar. So I explained net neutrality with beer. I hope that can help
that'll work. Sure.
Understand it. But yeah, it's in the sense of if you go to the bar and you want your bartender to pour you a drink, you want them to pour it all at the same speed. You don't want them to have preference over one, you know, type of beer that maybe they are invested in and pushing that one out because, you know, and when it comes down to it, all these tech companies, all these Comcasts, I don't know, they're also becoming media companies. You know, AT&T is trying to get a stake in CNN, and you have, you know, Comcast with NBC and Verizon and AOL. So, you know, when your internet provider cares that you read one news outlet more than another, or they might not want you to go on Netflix because they'd rather have you subscribe to Hulu, you know, they're going to make deals and try to, you know, convince you to have one thing over another, maybe slow something down, and that's what people are afraid of. They just want it to be an even playing field.
That makes sense.
All right, Tammy Duckworth, Dick Durbin, I am calling them today. I want net neutrality to happen. I don't want the appeal. I want one more vote. Get it done.
Good, good. Bridget, thanks for talking to us. We really appreciate it.
No problem. Talk to you later.
It's Bridget Carey from CNET. That's the website to visit, CNET.com. We'll take a quick break, give you some news, and then more show. Bill and Wendy, WGN.
Oh, boy. All right, Bill. This is going to be a serious conversation. And
just for the record, I was kidding. Just for the record,
right.
I was kidding.
Dr. Douglas McCoy, full-time visiting professor of sociology on the Chicago campus of DeVry University. First of all, Dr. McCoy, I apologize. Bill wanted Star Trek to be played, and I actually am one step ahead of Bill because during our interview, I was going to say no bones about it.
Ah, you're good.
So,
you know, I heard that music. I thought, here we go again.
Yeah, I know. Boy, we were kidding, but whatever. Anyway, what you reached out to us and on a topic that we all would like to discuss, here's what happens. I go on the internet, I go on Facebook, and I see all these articles about here's what happened in other countries. Here's what happened in Australia when there was a mass shooting. This happened, sure. And there's never been another shooting again. There's a lot of discussion right now about gun control, and is it gun control that we need? Does the government have to jump in and make rules harder? Is it mental illness? Maybe you can help us make sense of all this.
Well, I'd be happy to. You know, one of the things that I find in our courses, I teach a number of sociology courses, and we focus on social problems and social issues. And of course, one of those issues is gun violence. And I found over the years that it's hard to get American students to really understand the nature or the extent of the problem in our culture. So one of the things I did a number of years ago to kind of demonstrate that was just to kind of get a global perspective. So when we compare gun data, part of the problem is the U.S. is a very large country. We're 333 million people, right?
Yep.
So what I did was we looked at comparable countries. So like you said, Australia. Well, you look at Australia and you look at the number of gun deaths they have per year, and they typically have around 200. And so it's hard to understand how that matches with the U.S.
Right, because just in Chicago alone, we have, you know, so much more than that.
Right, in one city.
Yeah.
So to be comparable, we took nine countries, and nine countries whose population together is equal to or close to the U.S. But these are nine countries that have guns. They haven't banned them completely, but they have restrictive gun laws, or what I would call common sense gun laws. So, for example, the most recent data we have is from 2016. And in 2016, the U.S. population was 333 million. So you take the countries of South Korea, the United Kingdom, Japan, Poland, Australia, the Netherlands, Sweden, Norway, and I'm forgetting one.
Denmark.
So those nine together, their population is roughly 345 million. So actually more than the U.S.
So all those countries combined with their population equals the U.S.?
Yeah, basically, give or take a little bit. So then I asked students, okay, so how many gun deaths do you think, gun-related deaths in 2016, did we have in the U.S.? Well, the total in the U.S. in 2016 was 35,098, right?
Mm-hmm.
So we pondered that a little bit, let that sink in, 35,000 gun deaths. And 2016 was actually a very big year in terms of gun deaths in the U.S. And then I asked students to think, okay, now how many do you think in all nine of those countries together do you think we had? And we think about it, we throw numbers out, but the actual number is 1,293.
Jeez, that is a huge difference, a 34,000 victim difference.
It's not even comparable. I mean, it really allows us to see guns in a very different light.
So what do they do that we're not doing?
Well, you've got a variety of things that they're doing. What I like to call common sense laws. And the first thing I like to point out is that there are countries that I don't put on that list because they have extremely restrictive policies. So, for example, Ireland. In Ireland, handguns are banned. They have hardly any guns whatsoever allowed in Ireland, but their gun deaths per year in 2016 was 0.08, like nobody. So I don't leave those. I don't use Ireland as an example, but all of these countries on this list have common sense gun laws. For example, the laws we've been talking about, preventing the mentally ill from owning guns, gun laws related to gun shows. And obviously the big one is assault rifles, right?
Yep.
Banning assault rifles across the board. All those countries, the one main thing they have in common is they ban assault rifles.
Doesn't a lot of this, Douglas, come down to the sense of entitlement that a lot of Americans have, even though you can show them how the rest of the globe has given in and saying, wow, it's too dangerous to have these assault weapons, these semi-automatic weapons. For some reason, Americans don't buy into that. They'll talk about laws that were enacted in the 1700s.
When muskets were the
gun of choice.
Right.
So what is it about the American way of thinking that needs to change, and will it ever change?
So that's a perfect question, Bill. And what's interesting about that is that's actually not true. When you look at the sociological research on the perceptions of Americans on gun laws, you find that overwhelmingly Americans, both gun owners and non-gun owners, want to see change. So, for example, I can break these down category by category. But if you look at just the issue of, let's pick one, preventing the mentally ill from purchasing gun. So 89% of gun owners think we should prevent the mentally ill from purchasing guns, and 91% of non-gun owners do. So
that's pretty close.
Well, right, but that's just one item. And then when you look at things like the do not fly list or banning assault-style weapons. So assault-style weapons, look at that one. 70% of non-gun owners believe we should ban assault rifles.
Only 70%?
77%.
That's still low. These are non-gun owners. Only 77% think that assault weapons should be banned.
It's still a majority of Americans, though.
I expected it to be higher.
More than three, well, yeah, all right. So,
sorry, I just was astounded by that statistic.
Well, true, but I think for me the issue is that when you look at all the data in each of those categories, even things like the no-fly list, the no-fly list data will make you feel better, Wendy. 84% of non-gun owners want to see a ban on people on the no-fly list, and 82% of gun owners want to see a ban for individuals on the no-fly list.
And yeah, forgive me for interrupting you, but what was statistic before when I stepped on you about the assault weapons? The non-gun owners, 77%. What about gun owners? What was that statistic?
So gun owners for that is 54%.
Still over half.
Yeah.
But still over half.
So with those numbers, and they're devastating numbers, why can't we fix that? Why can't we change that? What's going wrong?
Well, you know, so that's exactly, after I lay all this kind of data out for my students, that's exactly the question we always end up at. And for me, now this is opinion now instead of statistics and data.
Yeah.
My opinion is it comes down to two things. It comes down to lobby reform,
yeah,
and it comes down to term limits. We don't seem to have, because you can break this data down by voting districts, by region, by state. And you look at those states or those voting regions, and you can see using the Pew Research data what the individuals within the district would want to vote, and yet you can see the way the representatives do vote. So we've lost our ability to pass legislation based on the concept of representing the individuals within our district. We're now representing those individuals who lobby and who fund our campaigns.
All right, so that said, here's a question that needs to be asked. You mentioned the other countries of comparable size or population who are not having these problems. Is there do they have a form of NRA in those countries that is anywhere near as strong as it is in the United States?
Well, none of them have an NRA that's nearly as strong as it is in the U.S. The one that would be somewhat comparable would be Australia. But Australia is interesting. You know, in 96, Australia had a mass shooting in Tasmania that killed, like, I want to say 35 people. And within months, they passed sweeping legislation. They had a buyback program. And their approach is actually interesting. So they technically, you can have an assault rifle in Australia, but here's what they do. You have to keep them at a gun range. So you go to the range, you check out your assault rifle, you use it there, but you leave it there. You're not allowed to have it on your personal property.
I like that.
Or your premises.
So brilliant.
There are examples globally of solutions that do make sense and have worked.
So when laws are enacted that quickly, that says to me that they don't have that attitude of, oh, this is not the time to talk about guns and gun safety that we pull out every time there's any kind of a shooting in the United States.
No, it took one to make change. Now we have these shootings all the time.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly the point. And when you look at the number of mass shootings in globally, the U.S. leads the list by a drastic amount. We've had a total of 90 mass shootings in the U.S. The next closest country is 18.
Wow. We're talking with Dr. Douglas McCoy, a full-time visiting professor of sociology on the Chicago campus of DeRay University. If you want to jump in on the conversation, we'd love to hear from you. We're at 312-981-7200. More after this on WGN.
The Real McCoys, starring Walter Brennan, created by Irving Finkus.
Want you to meet the family known as the
Bill,
Real
McCoy. Is everything a joke to you?
No. Felt bad. We played the Star Trek theme for Dr. McCoy, so I fixed it by playing the theme from The Real McCoys with the great Richard Crenna and Walter Brennan. No one's done that one.
I love that. I love that one.
All right. I also have Hang on Sloopy by the McCoys that we can play as well. But all right, enough of that. This is a serious topic, and we're getting a lot of interesting texts that people don't want to get rid of their guns. My question is, with this whole shooting that happened, all of a sudden students are speaking up. Why did it take this shooting for someone to pay attention?
Well, I think we have been paying attention. I mean, if you're someone who's passionate about this topic, I mean, you can't say we didn't have a huge outcry after Columbine. You can't say we didn't have a huge outcry after Sandy Hook or the nightclub or Las Vegas. It's just different types of outcries. So students right now are getting passionate. And I think we're responding to the fact that we see on TV, I saw the one interview with a student from Florida where he basically was calling out Senator Rubio and saying he was coming for him. And I think people are responding to that kind of passion. I mean, I have two high school children myself, and they will tell you that it's crazy to go to high school and to be afraid that you that this could happen while you're trying to go to school.
There was a little scare last week at my son's high school. I kept him home. It was not warranted to close the school, but it made me uncomfortable. He was uncomfortable. I was talking to another parent, and they said, yeah, my son has already figured out three exits to each classroom and where to go. And I'm like, kids have enough going on in high school. They don't need to be thinking about this.
Yeah, it's scary. But again, when you look at the stats in the U.S. compared to any other country, developed industrial country in the world, I mean, there are 7 children killed every day in the U.S. by guns. I mean, it's a real concern. It's a reality that we have to address.
Let's talk about the psychology, Douglas, for a second, of any time there's an incident like this. Gun sales rise. There's a story I read today about a gun show that was just held in the past couple of days in Tampa, where there were lines out the door to get into the gun show to purchase more weaponry. Right. What's that all about? Is it just the fear that people would have that maybe the government is going to try to do something and limit these weapons, so they got to buy them now while they can? Is that what that is?
Sure. So to get into that question, you've got to look at the qualitative research with individuals in our society. And what you find in talking with people who respond that way is that there's a fear. There's a fear of maintaining and protecting their family, maintaining their wealth. And it's also a response to the fact that our government has not protected us. I think there's a general acceptance of the fact that if we live in a country where there's 35,000 gun deaths a year and our government's failing to provide even common sense legislation to protect us, then my only option is to purchase guns and to protect us. And to be clear, I'm not anti-gun. You know, I have owned guns, but I think we need common sense laws to protect our citizens.
And I know that people who go through the proper channels to obtain a gun are not usually the ones that use them. I know that in Florida, this kid was able to obtain them legally. So in a way, that has to change. Someone thinks, what about making ammunition much more expensive and taxing it? Because, you know, smokers have to pay extra tax because it's not good for you. What about that? You know, taxing the ammunition?
Well, have you noticed that we've had lots of discussions about lots of interesting, creative things to propose? Banning bump stocks, taxing ammunition. In the end of the day, those types of things aren't the solution. The solutions that we've seen that have worked in other countries is simply banning assault rifles. You know,
could you specify assault rifles? Because there are people that want to know the definition. Because I said automatic versus semi-automatic. I didn't know the difference, and I was called to the table on that last week. So assault weapons mean what?
Well, in most countries that have banned assault weapons, they've banned both semi and automatic weapons. And think to yourself this. Do you need a semi-automatic or an automatic weapon to go hunting? And if you do, you can have places, again, like the Australian model, where you can go and use those types of rifles. But in an urban environment, does the average individual need either a semi or automatic weapon?
Judy has a quick question. Judy, we don't have a lot of time, so hop to it.
Okay. I think also that our country has cut so far back on mental health facilities due to economics that the ruling out of school is cognitively, you know, safe versus not plays a part in it. And I've had a personal experience with somebody who was in a lockdown mental health facility and went after being in there, went and applied for a FOID card. I called down to Springfield to make sure that that person would be denied because lots of things slipped through. And people are not coming forth if they have a family member or a friend who has a trigger temper and a form of mental illness in order to stop that.
Judy, that's a great point. And you also mentioned that healthcare is more important to some of the other countries than ours as well. Thank you so much for calling.
You're very welcome.
If I could jump in on that issue, you know, that's an excellent point. And are we going to be individually responsible to call the law enforcement or the state when we think somebody we know with a mental issue is buying a gun. And so this brings up what we call the Obama rule. In 2012, after the massacre at Sandy Hook, a legislation was passed that would prevent an estimated, I think, 75 or 80,000 people in the U.S. from buying guns with a mental disorder. But what a lot of people don't know is that one of the first acts that President Trump took care of when he took office was to repeal that. So we actually went through the whole process after Sandy Hook to pass legislation just on this issue, and it was rescinded by President Trump in February of this year.
Douglas, we're out of time, but there's an article I would love for you to read. I wish we had time to discuss it. It's at QZ.com, and it talks about how 3%, very low number, 3% of the U.S. population own half of the guns in this country. And it asks the question, why? Why do you need that much weaponry?
Well, I've got an even better one for you. 48% of all guns in the world are owned by the U.S., and yet the U.S. only represents 5% of the global population.
We need to talk again, and we appreciate you reaching out to us. It's Dr. Douglas McCoy, educational consultant, full-time visiting professor of sociology on the Chicago campus of DeVry University. Thank you so much for your time, and we will talk to you again.
I'd love to. Have a great day.
Thanks, Douglas. Appreciate it. We'll take a quick break. We've got news next, and then more show. Bill and Wendy, WGN.
Thank you, Kim.
Wendy, in studio right now to talk about the Jewish Film Festival. Julie, help me with the last name. I don't want to say it wrong.
Smolansky.
Did you say it right? You got it?
I think I got it right.
Okay, very, very good. You are the producer of two of the films running at the Jewish Film Festival, The Homestretch and The Hunting Ground. But before we talk about those, your background is not so much in film as it is food, correct?
Correct. I actually am the CEO of Lifeway Foods, the kefir company here in Chicago.
Really?
Yes. And actually, so, you know, Lifeway was started 30 years ago by my parents, who were refugees from the former Soviet Union.
Yeah.
We were Jewish Soviet Jews.
Yeah.
And my family comes from a line of Holocaust survivors and victims. And so this idea of the Jewish Film Festival is very interesting because it kind of speaks to my roots of sharing these stories that are so critical to humanity and yeah. kind of our existence, and sort of why I decided to go into film was to be able to tell these really important stories.
Mm-hmm. So sparked yeah. by passion completely.
Completely, yeah.
I love that.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's a film becomes a really interesting tool and catalyst for creating emotion and moving people and inspiring kind of action and civic action, which I think I always reflect on kind of that time during the Holocaust and how important it was to tell the stories of what was happening and to inspire action to make sure that these kinds of things never happen again.
Right.
I mean, and they do happen, and that's why we have to talk about them.
And yeah. it's, you know, I grew up Catholic in Brookfield. There were no Jewish people around. Still not a lot of Jewish people in LaGrange where I live. And my kids don't know much about that religion. So going to the Holocaust Museum opened their eyes to something they've never thought could have ever happened. You hear stories, but when you actually witness it at the museum, so it's very important that we get out there and learn about somebody else's religion,
right?
And culture.
I mean, and not all the movies are are about religion. Actually, The Hunting Ground and The Homestretch are not religious at all. The Hunting Ground highlights sexual assault on college campus and the cover-up of sexual assault on campus. And it's this idea of crimes against humanity, of social justice, of giving back to our community. What is really important in our community is education, higher education. We really want our children to attend higher education. And so these things happen in our communities to everybody. You know, sexual assault is an epidemic, and it is something that demands us to look at, even though it's really uncomfortable, even though it's a hard conversation to have, like so much of our history and our cultures are hard to look at. And The Hunting Ground is so powerful because it really laid the foundation for this Me Too movement that's happening right now. It's an entire movement that kind of was born out of the injustice that we're seeing that we were silent about. And it's this decision that we've made that we are not going to be silent anymore, that we've been silent for too long, for centuries we've been silent, and that's not going to happen anymore. And so that's sort of it's the values, not so much the films talking about something Jewish or not Jewish or religion. And the connection is that there is some sort of, you know, a producer, a director, or subject matter that is Jewish. It's sort of a loose kind of thing.
So and, Wendy will be let into the festival if she is.
Yes, anyone can come.
Okay, just want to make sure.
Yeah, and the home stretch is a film that covered and really highlighted the story of Chicago youth that are homeless. Mm-hmm. And I think the connection there, so again, this is an epidemic that's happening all across the country. We looked at Chicago specifically and followed the journey of the youth that are undergoing tremendous trauma, loss, confusion. They're alone, they're on the streets, they're cold, they're hungry. And so those are the things that I tapped into when I thought about, you know, my choice of supporting, you know, that film. And I did connect to what did my ancestors think about when they were losing their home, when they were hungry, when they were cold, where they didn't have a home anymore. And that's kind of, you know, the big picture, I think, of why this fest is so important. This film festival is going to bring together 31 films.
Wow.
Yeah, 31 films. It's very broad. There's documentaries, there's feature films, there's comedies, there's things that will make you laugh, things that will make you cry, things that will move you. You will walk away really inspired. They really have done a great job of bringing together all of these pieces of art to infuse they're infused with stories of love and loss and survival. And it starts March 1st and goes till the 18th. So definitely check it out. Lots of things.
Where do we go to see these films?
Well, they're all throughout. They're at ArcLight Cinema, at the Illinois Holocaust Museum. You can go visit jccfilmfest.org for all the details. There's screenings, there's conversations, and really, you know, we're bringing together our community.
Both of the films that you've produced, mm-hmm. The Homestretch and The Hunting Ground, they're both documentaries, correct?
Correct. They're real stories.
Last year at this time, during the festival, I saw the film Life Animated for the first time, and it was the best movie I saw all year. Awesome. Of every movie I saw. So,
that's great.
Yeah. So the selection process for this festival is very strong. You guys always have some great entries. We'll take a quick break and then pick this up in just a little bit. If you have any questions or comments, easy to reach us at 312-981-7200. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. Bill Leff, and it's Wendy Snyder. Our guest is Julie Smolansky. She has not one but two films in the JCC Chicago Jewish Film Festival this year. One is The Homestretch. The other is The Hunting Ground. One deals with Chicago's youth homeless problem. The other, sexual assault on college campuses. You've seen these in theaters with audiences. What has the reaction been thus far?
Well, both of these films are actually a couple of years old, and it's been amazing. I mean, The Hunting Ground, as I mentioned earlier, has sort of laid the foundation for the Me Too movement. And as a matter of fact, the song that we feature in the film was written by Diane Warren and performed by Lady Gaga at the 2016 Oscars. And I was able to share the stage with Lady Gaga and 50 Survivors. And
that was a beautiful moment, by the way.
I think we should have won. But in any case, the song itself had a huge ripple effect around the country and in the world immediately. I mean, even from China, within minutes, people in China were already talking about it. And I could see as I stared out into the audience that, you know, everyone was moved and that they weren't shedding tears for us. They were shedding tears for themselves. And I really feel that it has been something that has changed what our world is, and it will never be the same again.
Yeah.
I think it really empowered Hollywood, to the women in Hollywood, to stand up and sort of start this movement. And I think that's what it's all about, is that when, you know, today, when we look at atrocities that happen in the world, when I do, when folks at the JCC, you know, at the Jewish Community Center when our community looks at these atrocities, we feel we are obligated to speak out about them, that we can't be silent about the issues that matter, that we can't be complicit, then we're just as bad as the predators, sure. You know? And I think that's what I've learned from studying my history and my ancestors.
We were talking off the air about the home stretch, which is about homeless people here in Chicago, children and adults mm-hmm. featured in this.
Mostly children. We're talking about the youth in Chicagoland. You know, there's 20,000 homeless youth in the Chicago school system.
See, we hear that, and unless you're experiencing it, I find that so hard to believe. I mean, you know, having no place to sleep at night, where do you do your homework? If you're hungry, how do you sleep? It breaks my heart.
Yeah, it's an amazing trauma, intense trauma that our children are going through and don't have the resources to cope. And what does that set up our community for then? You know, we have to look at this.
And Julie, true or false, a lot of these cases, they're just moments away, miles away from some of the richest areas in Chicago,
yeah,
right?
Yeah. 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 It should pull at our heartstrings. Yeah. We really should take action. I mean, this is what the point is that we shine such a bright light on some of these hard conversations and cannot turn away. We have to create the political will for change, mm-hmm. for funding, for resources, for interventions, for, you know, a lot of this. We're talking mental health in so many of these cases because it is trauma that our communities are going through.
Right.
And even if you're just seeing it on the news or hearing about it, that's still trauma that our communities are absorbing all the time. And yeah. So I think, you know, yeah, it's sort of moving in our community with compassion and love that seems to be missing in so many cases.
And homeless means no insurance, and plus being under 16 years of age and trying to find health care is a very difficult thing, right. Even with people that have insurance. So it's something that needs to be focused on. We need
hygiene,
to be,
you know, yes. Imagine just like the basic, you know, things like hygiene and how do you get through school when you have to face these types of stereotypes and stigma. That just creates extra burdens.
Oh, God,
and bullying. And now you're just adding things upon things, layers upon layers of this complex, difficult situation.
All right. Now, I've not seen The Hunting Ground. I've not seen either film yet. I'm anxious to. But here's a quick question. There's a propensity on college campuses to cover up these mm-hmm. sexual assaults, especially if an athlete is involved.
Correct.
They want to protect their athletes.
And fraternities.
Right.
Sexual assault for both are, it's like the one or two highest insurance claim that they face.
So how do we change that? I mean, I understand that they feel that they have a property, a commodity that's valuable to them, but the weight of this just doesn't balance out. So
right.
what do we do?
The gig is up.
Right.
It's been uncovered. We know that you know, how it happens on all campuses at the rates that it does. 1 in 4 women on campus will be sexually assaulted. So that's 25% of all women on campus and men, too. It happens to men, too. So how do we change it? Well, I mean, it's having these important conversations. We talk about consent a lot. Consent is probably one of the biggest things we need to talk about with young people in our communities, with our children, with boys and girls. We need boys to see this too. We need boys to, you know, be involved in this conversation specifically. And media, again, like media creates consciousness. Media creates culture. These films, not just the two that we're talking about, but all 31 films here that will be featured at the JCC Jewish Film Festival, all shine a light on culture, all are working towards changing some culture or moving people into action. So I think, you know, media and creating different types of media, creating different kinds of content, which really empowers our youth, boys and girls and communities, is really important.
How about the schools that go out of their way to make the victims look like the bad people in these equations? They're so intent on protecting their athletes or their fraternities that they'll actually shame the girls who have been assaulted. This is one of the reasons.
It is. It's horrific. It's one of the reasons why there's so much silence around this topic and why it has been so hard for survivors to come forward. And unfortunately, that creates this culture where perpetrators feel that they are entitled and they are able to get away with it.
Yeah.
And so what has been really, really so powerful, so moving, so inspirational is seeing how the survivors have been courageous and brave to share their stories and to really push back against culture and to demand change, even facing stigma, even facing the most vicious attacks, even from their own families, from people that love them, and they still keep their head up and go forward because they are invested in the next generation. They are doing this so that no other girl, no other boy ever has to say, me too.
Right.
And again, that kind of just goes back to my Jewish values of how I was raised and kind of those kind of pinnacles of our values, I think. We want to always remember that we're all survivors and that, you know, we've gone through so much as a people. And those are the lessons of my ancestors that I can take into these, you know, other places that need.
You're pulling it off.
Totally. Can I give the website? Because people are calling and want to know. Yeah. It's jccfilmfest.org.
Correct.
The whole schedule will be posted there. The festival runs from March 1st through the 18th. We're talking about the home stretch and the hunting ground, but there are 31 films that will be featured. jccfilmfest.org.
Thank you.
You're doing great,
Julia,
work.
Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
Keep
I'm
making
so
that kefir.
Honored. Thank you. Yes.
It tastes just like Kiefer Sutherland. It's
That's
delicious.
Right. That's right. And I mean, this whole idea is like we have to, you know, the health and wellness is not just food. It's really body, mind, and spirit.
Yeah.
And you have to lead in all areas in your community.
So true.
Thank you.
Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
We'll take a quick break. Wendy and I are headed to the stream, but you can listen to the Wintrust Business Lunch. We'll tell you what's on there next. Bill and Wendy, WGN.